Hi, my name is Blythe Alberg, and I would like to welcome you to the Cut the Fat podcast. Visit us at www.cutthefatpodcast.com. If you're new to us, we suggest that you listen to the first 3 to 5 podcasts for the basic toolbox on fat loss.
All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Dr. Ray Heinisch, and I'm joined here in the studio by Blythe Alberg. Good evening, Blythe. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, fantastic, man. It's been a really great week. Tons of energy, tons of stuff going on.
Well, I know you've got tons of stuff going on. You've got that new treadmill in your office. You've got the office of the future. You've got to be feeling great.
Oh, yeah. You know, I can't wait to put the office of the future on our website so people can see it. For those of you who don't know, I recently got what's called a treadmill desk. This is a desk that you actually put over a treadmill. So literally I walk all day long, 6 to 8 hours while I'm doing my work. And man, it has been terrific.
It's exhilarating, isn't it?
It's fantastic. Yeah. You know, by the end of the day, you just feel like you've accomplished so much. I mean, aside from feeling like I'm even more efficient in front of that desk, walking on the treadmill, than I am seated, you just feel like you've accomplished so much. I mean, every day I burn 600 to 800 calories a day, and on top of that, you know, I'm walking a marathon, the equivalent of a marathon, every 3 days or so.
That is just crazy.
It's pretty
cool. But I love it. I'm envious, actually.
Well, I mean, the message there is I want people to kind of just look for ways that you can increase activity throughout the day. You know,
it's absolutely creative.
Yes. I mean, it can be as simple. It can be getting up and walking to your, the desk of a coworker instead of using the telephone to call them. Simple stuff. But you know what? Get up and move as much as possible. Every single calorie does count. Every single time you get up, it makes a change in your body. As a matter of fact, I can make the statement that just standing instead of sitting burns 5 times more calories.
Sure. And most people, when they're standing, don't stand still.
Right.
So besides the fact that you're just standing, right, you're fidgeting too.
And when you're standing, you're also calling into action your core muscles and everything. So you know what? It can be small things. Just make small changes.
So maybe the next time we record a podcast, we should do it standing or walking on a treadmill even.
Trust me, I thought about it. The only thing that stopped us is the logistics of it, is
sure,
getting all this equipment over there on the treadmill. But I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think our listeners should absolutely be walking or doing something while they're listening to our podcast.
At least fidgeting.
It's almost an insult to be sitting down while you're
listening to
our podcast. In today's show, we're going to talk about the 17 reasons you're not losing weight. Now, this is an article that I came across while searching through and reading a bunch of different blogs out there. And one of my favorite blogs is Mark's Daily Apple. It's www.marksdailyapple.com, no apostrophe. And the gentleman who writes this blog is named Mark Sisson. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. Mm-hmm. Is it Sisson or Sisson or...
It looks like Sisson.
Sisson.
S-I-S-S-O-N. Yeah.
We'll just, for all intents and purposes, we'll call him Mark Sisson.
How about Mark S?
Mark S. Mark, if you're listening and we mispronounced your name, please give us a call and let us know and we'll correct it. But a very interesting blog. And he also wrote the book that's called Primal Blueprint, right?
Which is a fantastic book.
Fantastic.
If you guys haven't read it, it's a really easy read. There's a lot of great golden nuggets of information, as we like to say.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the 17 points.
Why don't we just get started with them? Okay. Well, point number one is you think you're eating healthy, but you aren't.
Right. And I think there are many degrees of eating healthy, depending on what you're eating has started like. You know, what you're doing today, if you're eating if you're eating fast food all day long, well, you know, you're probably not eating healthy. So it's time to start making choices of natural foods. If you're already someone who eats natural foods, start assessing the types of foods that you're getting, the types of calories that you're ingesting.
Right. And listen to the previous podcast, which will help you to subconsciously change the quantities of the food that you're eating without having to consciously count foods or weigh foods and do stuff like that. I think another part of this point of thinking you're eating healthy is what are labeled as health foods. You know, there are a lot of quote unquote health foods that really aren't healthy. I talked about last week just ordering a salad from the Cheesecake Factory. You know,
right,
there are some of their salads are 1,000 calories.
Right.
And that's not something you want to be eating, right? Even though it's a salad, which is considered health food, it's not necessarily truly healthy, especially when we're talking about weight loss, right?
Right. And it does depend what's in the salad too. I mean, don't trick yourself and mislead yourself. And that's another point coming up here. So I'm not going to mention too much about it, but you don't want to trick yourself into saying, well, I'm eating a salad, but really knowing at the back of your mind, it's a fried chicken on top with nuts and chunks of blue cheese or, a fattening salad.
Yeah. And, I think the Cheesecake Factory, one of the ones that I've had in the past,
the Cheesecake Factory.
I hate to because they do make good food taste-wise. But you got to keep in mind, these restaurants are in it to get people to enjoy the taste and flavor of their foods.
And their serving sizes there are enormous.
Ridiculous.
Oh, my gosh.
So you can have too much of a good thing. We talked a lot about that last week. But what are some other quote-unquote health foods that really aren't that healthy?
I can think of a few. There are a lot of diet foods out there. Mm-hmm. Low-carb noodles. You can get, even sodas. I mean, they label diet soda as if that's okay to drink. Diet soda is okay, but soda should not be your first choice of a drink either.
Right. It's not healthy. Don't get yourself to believe that diet soda is healthy just because it doesn't have sugar.
Right. Empty calories are not necessarily healthy foods.
Right. And in the case, even non-calorie foods aren't necessarily healthy either. So, we're talking about a couple of different things here. There are foods that will help you achieve weight loss without necessarily promoting health.
Mm-hmm.
And diet sodas may do that because you're not adding calories to the body. Although some studies suggest that if you use diet sodas, you actually eat more to account for that lack of calories.
Okay.
But besides that point, some people can use diet sodas successfully to help them lose weight, but that's not necessarily promoting the level of health. And it's kind of yours and my mission to do just that. We want people not just to lose weight. We want them to do it and still be healthy, right?
That's right. And it can be done. And, coming from a bodybuilder's perspective, it's not always done healthily.
Of course not.
Bodybuilders, just because they look lean and they look great, does not mean they're healthy.
Absolutely. Some other foods that I think people get mixed up with are things like fruit juices. People think they're healthy, but really they're sugar water.
Right. Yeah. If you're going to go for something fruity, have a real piece of fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I also make the point that we talked about the golden rule, which is eat the food in the package that nature provides.
Yes.
You don't see you don't see a glass of orange juice growing on a tree, do you?
No.
You see oranges growing on a tree. And how many oranges is one glass of juice?
Like eight oranges or something
oranges.
Crazy.
Right.
And you're not getting any of the fiber.
Right.
You're not getting any of the fiber. You're not getting any of the skin that's on the orange.
But what are you getting?
You're getting all the sugar.
All of the sugar. So, I was working out in the gym yesterday and I heard one of the clients talking to the trainer and said, I found a no sugar fruit juice. I'm thinking, wait a minute, it's impossible because fruit juice is basically sugar in water.
Okay.
And but then she continued. She's like, yeah, the box said no added sugar. So what does that mean?
Added sugar. So they didn't dump any tablespoons of sugar on top of the fruit sugar. Very misleading. Right.
Very misleading.
So basically, you should turn it around, look at the label on the package, and read the ingredients that are in there. If you cannot pronounce any of the ingredients that are in the foods that you're eating, that's a red flag.
But if you can pronounce it and it sounds like sugar.
Or high fructose corn syrup. Those are red flags too.
Yeah, they are. But the point is if you're not losing weight, and we just got an email from somebody, right? Who and guys, let me tell you, we love getting your emails. So please go to our website, www.cutthefatpodcast.com, and send us your email.
Please do. We enjoy reading them.
And of course, go on iTunes and rate us, please. It really does help us reach more people when people, leave us ratings and stuff. But that's, I digress. But what the person was saying was, I started cutting carbs, but then when I started listening to your show, I realized that even though I'd cut carbs, I'm still eating significant amounts of carbs, and it disgusted me.
Right. She had taken out sugars, and she had taken out adding sugar to things. She had taken out gum, and there was something else that she mentioned that she had taken out, which were the real obvious things.
Yeah.
But then assessing the foods that she was still eating, she found she was eating
significant amounts.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you cut your carbs, if you go from no program to cutting 25%, you know what? You may achieve significant changes just from doing that alone. And I would not be adverse to you continuing that program until you level out, because making these slow changes can really wean your body into changing its biochemistry, which is typically what the body wants. It typically doesn't want an overnight change if it can help it, as far as everything you're doing.
Right. And that's what's going to keep
that type of
change. And that's going to keep the results. You're going to get to hang on to what you've achieved.
Very good point. So because this is only really a half an hour show, maybe we should move on.
We've got 17 points. That was number one. Number two is you're under too much stress. I want to quickly just touch on stress because I know I'm somebody that says, oh, I never stress out. I'm pretty easygoing. Mm-hmm. I really don't stress out. But, you know, lately, and I think a lot of people can agree with me, is financial stress has become something that, you know, everybody's kind of feeling a little bit more, even if you weren't before. Relationship stress, physical stress, emotional stress. There are so many different types of stresses that you may not believe are stress,
right,
but you're truly stressing.
Let me kind of explain to people what happens when you're under stress, because stress is a non-specific reaction. So it doesn't matter what caused the stress. The biochemical changes in the body are identical. So the stress response is really developed to protect us from lions, tigers, and bears, right? When we were evolving out in nature. And what happens is when a lion would jump out to have a nice human scrumptious little treat, our bodies would kick in a fear reaction. That fear reaction would cause two main hormones to skyrocket. Adrenaline is one and cortisol is the other. Adrenaline causes the heart to be able to start beating quickly. It pulls sugar out of the muscles so that it can be out of the liver so that it can feed the tissues that need it right away in order to be able to run away or fight the animal.
So you
away.
Can sprint. It's right. Called fight or flight. Right. Right.
Very good. Yeah. Okay. Fight or flight. And so the adrenaline really helps to pull out energy that it can use right away. Now the cortisol helps when cortisol kind of when you get a bolus dose of cortisol, like you do when a stressor hits you, it causes fat to be removed from the fat cells. Interestingly enough, long-term cortisol secretion, which happens under chronic stress, has the opposite effect. But in the beginning, it helps you to access those fat cells. In addition, it begins to break down and promote the breakdown of muscle tissue. So what happens when you run away from the lion? Let's say you're lucky and you get away from the lion. Well, guess what happens? Adrenaline levels drop, but cortisol levels remain elevated. And what we've discovered is the reason cortisol remains elevated after stress is because it wants to promote – because cortisol has this interesting effect on the brain. It promotes appetite because the body says, well, you used all this energy to get away from this lion. Now we have to replace those stores. So it gets you to want to eat and find more food.
Mm, so comfort food.
Right, exactly. Okay, okay. And so the cortisol, unfortunately, when it's elevated chronically, which it was never designed to be, it was only designed to, you know, how often would you run into a lion out in the bush? You know, maybe once every couple days, maybe once a week, once a month. Right. I don't know. But it was only meant to be called into action once every once in a while.
Just occasionally.
But what do? We have stress every single day. And because, you know, the boss yelling at you, your husband or wife yelling at you, or money stress.
Or school.
Whatever,
I mean, if you've got
it doesn't matter. The biochemical reaction is the same as if you're being chased by a lion all day, every day. That causes your body to want to store energy. So it has it there in order to be able to deal with all that fighting and flighting, right?
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. So cortisol is the hormone that's released.
Uh-huh. And you've got
by stress.
So how do you fix it?
Well, I would say my personal recommendation would be exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you are getting some form of exercise every day. You know, somebody had asked me about belly fat the other day, and it immediately made me think about that new product. I see it on the
Relicor.
Relicor. It's the commercial that helps reduce the levels of cortisol. Mm-hmm. Although, if you start taking something like that, wouldn't that just throw your whole chemistry off? You'd totally go to imbalance, right?
Well, what ends up happening, these are typically what's called adaptogenic herbs. And adaptogenic herbs are herbs that literally help your body to adapt to stress from a biochemical perspective.
Okay.
So from a theoretical perspective, the Relicor product, which contains these adaptogenic compounds, could help the body to normalize its stress response. So from a theoretical perspective, it might help to decrease cortisol levels. But from a practical perspective, although there are effective adaptogenic herbal formulas out there, Relicor, I don't believe, is one of them.
Okay.
You know, there are some other ones like Rhodiola rosea, which is a rosevin or Arctic herb, ginsengs, and ashwagandha.
These are all natural things.
Yeah, okay. They can be helpful. And I do use them
stress
in my practice as well. I do. People who are stressed, I will use these adaptogenic herbs. But I can tell you this, those may tone down the issue. But really, all it's about is really changing the way that you view stress. Mm-hmm. And that takes practice. It takes some investigation. So we're not going to be able to get – maybe we can approach that in three or four shows in the mm-hmm. future. But you know, for the short term, you know, there are plenty of really good books on there out there as to how to deal with stress or how to relate to stress a little bit differently.
Okay.
One I really like, which is a very old book. I think it was written in the 30s or something by Dale Carnegie. And that's How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. Very interesting book. You can find it at bookstores. It's dirt cheap. And it can give you some really good tips on helping you to deal with stress. But what's clear is if you don't learn ways of dealing with stress and you're a high-strung person, it's going to be very difficult for you to lose fat, especially when we start getting closer and closer to your ideal body weight.
Okay. The thing I wanted to mention quickly about body fat was cortisol allows you, allows you to store, promotes
fat, right.
fat storage around your stomach, which yes. is where the whole Relicor thing yes. came into play, which mm-hmm. is why I brought that up. So, if you've lost fat everywhere else, but you've still got some around your midsection, that may be something you want to assess is your stress levels.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Good okay, point. So point number three is watch your carb intake. And we've talked about this a few times. You know, carbs are key, especially when you are looking at losing weight. Make sure you're paying attention, just like the email that we received earlier today from the woman talking about how she cut her carbs, but she really wasn't aware of how many carbs. So again, like we've mentioned before, write down what you're eating or mm-hmm. use some form of logging to actually become aware of how many carbs you're eating so you know where to start.
At least until you're calibrated to the foods that you're eating.
Right.
A lot of people, they're eating these carbs and you know they're not really paying attention to the types of foods they're getting. And therefore, they don't really know how much is carbs, how much is fat, what's a protein, what's a fat, what's a carb. Mm-hmm. So by writing these things down, you start to train your brain and calibrate it to the types of food you're eating. I think it's a very important point.
It becomes second nature. Yeah. It's a lifestyle change.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that plenty in previous shows, so we can probably move on. Anything else you want to add before we head out to
not
the next
point? Not on that point. Nope.
Okay. Point number four is, again, these are the 17 reasons you're not losing weight. You know, and keep in mind that's weight and not fat.
Mm-hmm.
And the next reason, which is the fourth reason, is you're adding muscle.
Hmm.
So what they're talking about here is we get so hung up on the scale, right?
Yes, that darn number.
That number. And the scale makes people cry. It really does. And it does because we don't look at it with a sophisticated view. We've talked a lot about that in previous shows, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But just know that when you're seeing weight changes, there are many reasons why that weight can be changing. And in this point, he's talking about how the fact when you make lifestyle changes that are healthier, you have a tendency to lose fat, but you also have a tendency to put on muscle and increase your bone density. All that weighs. You know?
Oh, yeah. It all weighs something. And, you know, if you're someone who is starting to watch your carb intake and you're eating more protein calories, you are going to put on a little bit of muscle.
Sure.
So you are going to gain a little bit of weight, and especially if you, you know, bump up your water like we've suggested in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are all going to – hydration weighs something too. So
it all makes a difference. Yeah, now, that doesn't mean don't weigh yourself. I think weighing yourself is an effective way of monitoring your results as long as it's – combined with other more accurate means of assessing body fat percentage.
Yes.
But it can be a good way of looking at feedback, of giving yourself feedback about whether or not your program is working. There's an interesting way of looking at whether or not you have insulin resistance. You might find this interesting. If you weigh yourself in the morning mm-hmm. and then you weigh yourself at night mm-hmm. and there's more than a 2-pound difference, that may indicate that you have an insulin resistance.
Really? Okay.
Yep. So that's one way of assessing things there. But the truth is, you take your weight in the morning. That's when you're going to be lightest. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a way of kind of tricking yourself and giving yourself an extra ace in the deck.
Right. You've fasted and you've gone all night without drinking water or anything, so you're a little on the dehydrated side.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most accurate. If you're going to keep weighing yourself, weigh yourself the same time of day.
So the point is, there may be really positive reasons why your weight hasn't changed. And that's why it's so useful to have a body fat percentage or at least have a body measurements done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Point number five, you're not active enough. If you're somebody who sits at a desk all day and works on your computer – make sure you're getting up and moving around. Like Ray suggested, get up and walk to your coworker's desk instead of using the phone to call them. Mm-hmm. Make little changes.
There was this interesting study that was done at the University of Maryland where they took a bunch of secretaries. This was many years ago. And they gave one group of secretaries a manual typewriter and the other group an electric typewriter. That was the only difference that they made. And they assessed how many calories the people were burning on a minute-by-minute basis.
Okay.
And what they determined was the group that was given the manual typewriter was burning 0.4 calories more a minute. Now, I can't really do the math in my head. At one point I knew the math. But in a day, I think that amounted to 100 or 150 calories, somewhere in that range.
Just by
per
moving
day.
Their fingers and pushing down on the keys?
Having to push manual keys down.
So every little bit counts is what you're trying to say.
Now, I want you guys to take it to a new level. I want you to walk more. I want you to play more.
Right.
You know, that's also important. There's this whole theory called fun theory. And the theory is this. That the reason we don't stick with a particular habit or lifestyle change is because it's no fun to us. It doesn't bring us pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It's commonsensical, right? It just – I mean, you would think that that would be the case. If you don't enjoy it, it's very difficult to stick with it, right? And they did this very interesting study where they went to this shopping mall that had an escalator and a regular stairs next to the escalator. What percentage, take a guess, and again, I don't know that these numbers are exactly, but they're close enough. What percentage took the escalator versus the stairs?
I'm going to say 85% of people took the escalator.
I believe it was closer to 95% took the escalator.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, the scientists made one change. Whenever somebody would step on one of the steps...
Onto the stair?
It would light up.
Oh, okay.
So they walk up, and as they stepped on the steps, each step would light up.
Okay.
You know?
Was this in Europe or something like that?
I don't remember where this was.
I think
they
did it at a train station.
Yeah.
Overseas somewhere.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what percentage do you think took the stairs when the stairs lit up?
I bet it was flip-flopped.
85%, I think, was about the number that changed.
Very cool.
So 85% now took the stairs. The only difference was the fact that they added a little bit of fun to the picture, right? So the brain wants pleasure.
Yeah.
Always. It always moves towards pleasure. It always moves towards things that feel good and things that add variety to their lives.
Right.
So try to do that. Just go play more, people.
Go find something that you enjoy doing that is active. I don't care if it's playing tennis, playing racquetball. It doesn't even have to be a sport. You can roll around on the trampoline with your kids outside or... You know,
go bowling, you know,
go bowling with your boyfriend or girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Go to museums, anything but sit on the couch, folks. Don't sit on the couch.
Come on, guys. It's easy. Remember, we used to go outside and play. We used to beg our parents to go outside and play. When did that change? When we became adults and had responsibility and had to go to work?
Yeah, well, we're giving it back to you.
Yeah.
To think about things that you've been wanting to try, like maybe boxing lessons or rock climbing or, you know, fencing. I don't know. Go find something to do, but don't sit on the couch.
There's a lot of variety out there. Okay, point number six. You are lapsing into chronic cardio. Now, here's a little tip that some people may not know. When you stay above 75% of your maximum heart rate for extended periods of time, you are burning glycogen. Your body then craves even more sugar to replenish those lost stores. So people who do a lot of cardio are probably eating to compensate for the amount of cardio they're doing.
Right. And the problem here is with what you are doing on a consistent basis. It's when you're doing plain old running on a treadmill for an hour at a time that I think there is a problem. And I think if you guys think out there, most of you have done cardio for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. Did it work for you? If it did, why are you listening to this show? The likelihood is it didn't work for you.
Right.
And the reason is, I don't know that that's the reason. I know he points out that you are using glycogen, and when you get to those really high fast rates, you're getting up into the 65, 75, 85% range of your maximum heart rate. You are beginning to burn more sugar. But I think the problem is the way that the body works. When I gave you the story about the lion, about being chased by the lion, what fuel do you think is being used when you're being chased by a lion?
I'm going to say sugar.
Yes, sugar, glycogen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Glycogen is being turned into glucose and being used for energy. That's when you have to run really, really fast. That's sprinting activities, right? And that burns sugar. So what happens – what do you think happens when the –
when you're sprinting for a long period of time.
Well, that never happened, for one, because you would get caught and eaten.
Oh, my God. You'd run – what's the point in running? Wait a second. Okay, wait. No, let's not talk about that.
When we're talking about high-level activity, sprinting is only meant to be kept – up for just a minute, mm-hmm. At a time. But most people are just running cardiovascularly, and that's burning mostly fat.
Or on the elliptical, right, or
because
whatever.
they're working in their range where they're burning fat. So going back to this story with the lion, you're chased by the lion, you get away. You stop. The body says, all right, we want to replenish the fuel. Which fuel does it have to replenish?
Oh, the sugars.
The sugars, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but the body cannot replace sugar and burn sugar at the same time. So what signal does it send out to the rest of the cells of the body? If it's storing sugar, what does it want to burn?
Fat.
Yes. So you see, your body responds to exercise and activity by burning the opposite of the material that you used.
Okay.
That's why interval training works so well, right, because you're really hitting the glycogen stores rather than the fat stores, and therefore the body wants to replenish glycogen, mm-hmm, and burn fat.
Okay, but it has to use fat then to replenish if you're not feeding yourself right away? Is that...
It will okay, burn the fat, right. That's okay, that's exactly what happens. And I know that one of the other points, the next point. Why don't we go to the next point? The key point about the cardio is cardio doesn't work for fat loss for the majority of people, meaning running at a pace of 65, 75, 85% of your heart rate, mm-hmm, which is like the standard.
So if you're going to go run 6 miles every day at 7 miles an hour,
you're probably better off walking, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. I see so many people at the gym running 5, 6, 7 miles a day, every day on the treadmill. Mm-hmm. Number one, a treadmill is not the same as running outside, mm-hmm, but that's for another show. And if you do the same thing every day, I think your body adapts to that.
It certainly does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to mention quickly, Mark mentioned in here that he had tried cardio. He was like a cardio king for a couple of decades, he says. And he said, you'll gain weight, lose muscle, release more cortisol because your body, mm-hmm, is under stress, and compromise any progress you might have made during, while you were eating, while you were making changes and becoming healthy.
Right. Look at some of the best cardio athletes in the world, marathoners and, mm-hmm, super marathoners. What do their bodies look like? They're usually very, very skinny. They look like they haven't eaten in months.
The word that comes to mind is waif.
Waif? I don't even know what that means. I have to look that up.
A waif. Yeah. Someone who's extremely thin, like a wisp. Okay. A wisp of a person.
They're like a stick person, mm-hmm, really, because their muscle has been eroded away. Mm-hmm. These people genetically have a tendency to be skinny anyway, but right, throw on top of that the fact that they're burning away their protein for the protein in their muscles to make sugar,
yeah,
in order to fuel their activity.
Think about the amount of stress that puts on your body.
Yeah, and look at sprinters' bodies. These are people that just do interval training, basically, and their bodies are, they're muscular. Mm-hmm. Lean. They're physically in shape, very lean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very lean. So that's a good way of visualizing the difference. Cardio, long-term cardio, although it can play a role in activity, and if you enjoy it, by all means, go enjoy yourself.
Right.
But don't use it as your primary tool for weight loss.
Right. Okay. You wanted to mention number seven.
Which was interval training. Number seven is you still haven't tried. Interval training is one of the points.
It's at the very end. It's talking about sprinting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I want to go back to that. Yeah.
Do you?
Okay. You want to do that at the end? Right now, at the end. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that at the end. So the next one is you still haven't tried intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. So, we're not big fans of long-term fasting. And long-term fasting is basically dieting, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're just cutting calories to the point where you're trying to access your fat cells by basically not feeding the body.
Right. One school of thought is if you take out 500 calories every day, mm-hmm, you will lose weight. And that's the truth. You, mm-hmm, will lose weight. But my personal goal is always to keep as much muscle as possible, since that constitutes your metabolism, and lose as much body fat as possible. Right. So I try to manipulate that. But if your goal is weight loss as a whole, this may work for you.
Right. Intermittent fasting is basically doing maybe a day where you fast for 12 hours. It could be a 24-hour fast. It could be a 12-hour fast. But it's just points where you allow your body to access the fat cells by not eating for a short period of time.
Okay.
And you refeed. Once you refeed, you're refeeding the body good foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I know of I've read stories, and I actually read a book of a gentleman who lost tremendous amounts of fat by doing the alternate day fasting program. This is a fairly new program that's being studied, and the studies have pretty much confirmed that it works quite well.
Okay.
As far as fat loss is concerned. And basically what it is people fast. They fast one day where they don't eat anything for 24 hours, and then the next day they eat what they want.
Whatever they want?
Pretty much whatever they want, because the belief is that if you fast for an entire day, that's about 2,500 calories that you'll be burning during that period of time.
Okay.
Let's say your metabolism drops during that time, and usually the metabolism doesn't respond that quickly. But let's say it did drop from 2,500 for a basal metabolic rate to 2,000. You still burn 2,000 calories. The next day, your body's burning 2,000 calories, but you're eating, let's say, 3,000 calories. So what ends up happening...
What if you eat way more than that, though? I mean, what if you're just...
It's pretty hard to eat more than 3,000 or even 3,500 calories.
Okay.
For most people. But let's say they're eating 4,000 calories.
Okay.
The next day. Which I believe is pretty tough. I don't think I've...
Not if you're eating whatever you want. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to eat half a cheesecake, you know what I mean? I'm just going to throw junk out there. I mean, high calorie. You could drink and eat 4,000 calories.
Let's assume that you do. Let's say you eat 4,000 calories on the second day.
Okay.
So now the basal metabolic rate was 2,000 calories. So let's say just from your basal metabolic rate, you burn 4,000 calories. But you also burn a good... 500 calories each day just from regular daily activities.
Okay.
So, there's a 1,000 calorie deficit there.
Mm.
Behind it. It's still a deficit. And when you're doing alternative day fasting, it could work for people. And we're going to talk about another way of using fasting for your weight loss purposes in another show. But it's an option. And to do intermittent fasting, I think, is healthy because it allows your body to burn some of that fat that's clogging up the muscles and the liver, because that's what will go first.
Mm-hmm.
And that can help re-spark your metabolism as well. So that's one thing he does recommend.
He recommends starting small, though, like maybe skipping breakfast one day, and then maybe the next time you try it, just skip lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Or skip lunch and breakfast, the third or fourth time you go.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Give it a try. See if it works for you and report back to us.
I think everybody's different, and different things are going to appeal to everybody.
And write us. Tell us if it does a good job for you or if you notice it that you don't feel good. But
yeah.
I think a lot of people will feel good doing it.
I'd like to hear the feedback on that. Number eight, you're eating too much. So even if you eat everything low carb, you're still getting calories.
Mm-hmm. And it's possible to eat too much of a good thing. We've already talked about that. So,
yes.
So reevaluate at that point. If you've gone through all these other points, reevaluate that one. Are you getting too much quantity of even a good thing?
Right. And as you get closer to your ultimate weight loss goal, whatever your ending weight is that you're aiming for, the same things probably aren't going to work. You're going to have to change your program to continue losing, especially those last few pounds. People always say the last 10 pounds or the last 5 pounds are the hardest to lose.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth, because you need to change your program.
Absolutely. The next point is a little bit broad. It just basically says you haven't overcome bad habits or developed good ones. So I guess the point in saying that is, each person is completely different, and the complexities of one person's life may not apply to another person's life. So we can't really list all of the possible bad habits that you could have. But reevaluate your life and really think, what is it that's standing in my way? Why haven't I achieved my results yet? What barriers or who's standing in my way?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a loved one or a friend that's sabotaging your results?
Sure.
Do an inventory and find what those are. And it's not good enough just to remove or purge your life of bad habits. You have to do what?
You have to create new ones.
Yeah, because
new good habits.
Your brain hates a vacuum. You got to fill the spaces with good stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. I read somewhere the other day that it takes 28 days to develop new habits or break old ones. Is that
mm-hmm.
is that true? Give
yeah.
it a good month.
That's why we have the 30-day challenge.
Oh,
because
love it.
The 30-day challenge, folks, is if you're just getting started or if you're just restarting, you might just dedicate yourself to doing 30 days, 30 minutes of activity for 30 straight days, including weekends and holidays, just to build the habit of it.
Cool. Or, you know, if you're going to try to cut refined carbohydrates out, give yourself a good 28 days.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Reform yourself. Number 10, I'm sorry. You haven't purged and primalized your pantry. This book, Primal Blueprint, is great at explaining how to go through your cupboard and things to get rid of and what to replace them with. Mm-hmm. You know, probably the best type of food is anything natural. So go grocery shopping, shop the perimeter of the store, because that's usually where the produce, the fresh meats, the vegetables, all of those things are kept on the outside of the grocery store. Try to stay away from the inside of the aisles unless there are a few items you need to pick up.
You can't succeed if you've got a pantry full of junk food.
No, if it's there looking at you, you're
going to
eat
it.
If you don't have it, and I was just saying this to Ray before the show, if I don't have junk in the house and it's 10 o'clock at night and I'm looking through the pantry and I feel like I want something sweet, I'm not going to go out and buy it. I'm just going to go without. Okay. It's 10 o'clock at night. I don't need it. I'm not going to eat it if it's not there. And I think that probably works for just about everybody.
I'm pretty sure that's the case. So definitely
so you
purge
don't have
your
any,
kitchen.
Right. You don't have any junk in your pantry, do you?
No. What happens is my brother's girlfriend will all, because I live with my brother in a townhouse, my brother's girlfriend will bring cookies. And once they're there, I can't help it. I go and I have to eat them.
Just because they're there.
And I've got a pretty good, strong willpower, but man, if it's there, you know what? You're going to eat it, folks. So don't. I even told my brother, I said, look, if I find junk food on the counter, I'm throwing it out. I don't care if you just bought it. It's a brand new package. I'm throwing it out. You know, and so he's just got to live by that rule.
So he's got to keep it in his bedroom then.
He hides it now. Yeah, okay. He does hide it. But as long as I don't see it, I'm good.
Okay.
So the next one is you've reached, this is point number 11. You've reached a healthy homeostasis. Now, healthy homeostasis basically is when your body is in good balance, and it's pretty much reached what we've call its set point. You know, we talked about this in a previous show as well. The set point is a weight that your body believes is a good weight for you to be to survive during times of famine, but not in excess. So you don't have a large amount of excess fat in your body. You have enough that will promote survival during times of famine. So the set point is really what's labeled as healthy homeostasis, meaning that the amount of fat that you have in your body isn't going to cause disease. It's actually it's fairly neutral, right?
Okay.
And it doesn't mean you can't reach levels that are leaner than your healthy homeostasis point, but you've just got to take a step back, give your body a breather, maybe hold the weight that you're at for a good 3 to 6 months, and then slowly begin to trickle away at that or chip away at that fat in your body and just slow the process down a bit.
Mm-hmm. And just make it more small changes and you can continue on your weight loss journey. Now, he does mention here that once your body's reached a healthy homeostasis, you want to ask yourself, do you want to mess with a good thing? I think he's talking about people who have reached a comfortable,
good, healthy level.
Yes, a good, healthy level. And do you want to disrupt that by continuing to try to lose weight, to push yourself?
Right.
And that kind of leads into the next.
Yeah, it gets a lot more difficult at that point, folks.
Yes.
So you really have to sit down with yourself and decide, okay, this is what it's going to take to take my fat loss to the next level. You know, and this is where you're really getting to the point where you're talking about fitness athlete level of fat for most people. And you've got to say, okay, am I willing to pay this price? Am I willing to really be strict with my calories? Am I willing to write down everything? Am I willing to exercise even more? If it's worth it for you to do that to achieve an even leaner look, then that's fine. Then go for it.
Okay, yeah, I say go for it. The next one is you're low on willpower. You know, I think that a lot of people say they don't have any willpower, but truthfully, everybody's got willpower. Whether or not you exercise it is something else to be said. You know, I think most people, if you just make yourself get up and get mobile, I don't know if it's go for a walk, hop on the elliptical, whatever it is that you're going to do to be mobile that day and get your exercise in, walking up the stairs instead of taking the elevator, whatever it's going to be, I think that that is going to spark your willpower and help you make better choices throughout the day.
Absolutely. And I know that in this section, he talks about how willpower or quote or comma lack thereof might actually be an indicator of your body's needs as well. Mm-hmm. So when your body needs certain nutrients or needs energy, it will oftentimes give you signals. And sometimes those signals get misinterpreted. For instance, you might misinterpret a desire for chocolate as your body needs sugar. But some studies suggest that a desire for chocolate is actually an indication that your body needs fat, not sugar.
Mm.
So you sometimes we misinterpret things as well. But willpower, or when you have a lack of willpower, we talked about this with the cookies. It's biochemical, really. Mm-hmm. Your body is sending signals. And if you don't listen to those signals, it yells them louder and louder and louder until you have no choice but to throw that food in your mouth. I honestly believe that it's very difficult to stop yourself. I mean, how many times have you found yourself standing in front of the refrigerator with the door open, not remembering how you got there?
Oh.
That's happened to me a number of times. That's a subconscious process.
Yes.
And, you know, willpower is a conscious process. If I was to give you a visual of the impact that conscious has versus the impact that subconscious has, it would be the image of a glacier. Only the conscious mind is only what you see on the top, but the majority is the subconscious mind, and that's underneath the surface.
The base.
Yeah. So okay. That's the way subconscious impacts willpower. So the what you should be asking yourself when you feel these things, these moments that you feel like you're about to give in, mm-hmm. is what does my body really need?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just kind of reassess and listen. Number 13, you're full of excuses. Now, this is something that I will totally agree with. I know for me, I do have internal arguments. He mentions having internal arguments with yourself all day. Should I eat that? Shouldn't I eat that? If I do, I'm going to go for a run. Or if I do, I'm going to go for a walk. If I eat this, I'm going to do this. And you discuss all day with yourself, lying to yourself about what you're eating, the nutrients of it, you know, making healthy choices. Okay, I'm going to eat a salad, but I'm going to order the fried chicken salad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be honest with yourself. Don't make excuses. You're the only one who can stop the excuses.
Absolutely. And that is, unfortunately, it's rampant in our society. Mm. I think it's a major reason why so many people are so overweight. And why they haven't made the changes necessary is because their lives are filled with excuses. And I'm not saying that, guys, to berate anybody. I'm
right.
saying it because you really need to think, sit down and think, am I giving myself excuses? We all do it.
Mm-hmm.
The level at which we do it is what matters. And in the case of people who are having difficulty losing weight, I can't tell you how many times they, you know, when I really dig deep, the excuses are you know, several layers down.
Oh, they're subconscious, I think. I think we've reached a point where excuses are subconscious. I can't go to the gym because I need to go pick up my kids. Where you could have made some sort of arrangement to make sure that you take care of yourself and your children rather mm-hmm. than just your children.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, excuses are on the subconscious level a lot of times. I think that we just rattle them off because it's become habit.
Right. And so you have to really do an inventory there and get rid of all excuses, guys. You're not to blame for any kind of situation with weight, but you are responsible. And responsible simply means the ability to respond. Responsibility. The ability to respond. You have that ability, but first you have to acknowledge it.
That's right. That's a huge key right there. Big golden nugget right there for you. I also think that has to do with gyms being packed, you know, mm-hmm. for the month of January and everybody's New Year's resolution being, I'm going to join a gym or I'm going to lose weight, because it only lasts for a month because we start coming up with excuses.
Mm.
Number 14, you haven't actually gone primal.
That's just a play on his book, which is the Primal Blueprint, which is basically, it's an area of research that looks at how we evolved as humans and the types of lifestyles that are natural for our body, for our biochemistry. All I'm going to say on that point is, you know, we've talked about it briefly, but get the book, Primal Blueprint.
It's a great,
really great book.
Great book, easy mm-hmm. read.
Yep.
Number 15, you're not getting enough sleep. Sleep is extremely important. Chronic levels of sleep deprivation causes the release of cortisol, and it's our old fat-storing friend.
Yes,
so,
it is.
So Mark puts it. The biggest spike in growth hormone plasma levels occurs when you're in your deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Most people should get between 7 to 8 hours of sleep a
yeah,
night. I think that's what's recommended.
Good. Sometimes it's a little
healthy
bit more. Living. Sometimes it's a little bit less. It's all dependent upon your particular system. But 7 to 9 hours, I'd say, would be an accurate representation of what's considered healthy for most people's bodies.
And probably depending on your activity levels throughout mm-hmm. the day. If you say I'm just going to say getting ready for a bodybuilding show because that's mm-hmm. what I know, and you're doing two workouts a day, you may need a little bit more sleep.
Yeah,
for your body to recover.
And one other point is some of the research out there suggests that we develop insulin resistance even after short periods of sleep deprivation. Even as little as one day of sleep deprivation can result in a level of insulin resistance that can promote fat loss. Chronic sleep deprivation is even worse.
So how many people out there are going without getting enough sleep?
Yeah, and that's a major problem. It's going to be hard to lose weight when that's the case because your insulin receptors are not functioning properly.
Mm-hmm. Number 16, right?
You haven't given it enough time. Guys, we were talking about this before we started the show.
Yeah.
You know, we all want it so fast. We really do. We want it so fast. Everything out there that promotes a weight loss program suggests lose 10 pounds in 3 weeks.
And that's what we all want to hear.
We want to hear it. Yeah. Our brains want that. But you know what? I'm more and more accepting the final truth, which is it's your design. You didn't put it on overnight. It's going to take time to get it off in a healthy enough way that you're not going to put it back on.
Right. And I love the way you put it. There's good news and bad news. Change is slow. Mm-hmm. Putting on weight is slow and taking it off is slow.
That's the good news mm-hmm. and the bad news. That's right.
Number 17, you're eating too much dairy. And this goes from person to person. It differs for everybody. Uh-huh. What's your view on dairy?
Well, interestingly enough, dairy is food for cows, not for humans. I honestly believe that. Okay. The human beings are the only animals that drink milk past infancy and the only animals that drink the milk of another animal or the fluids of another animal. We've been sold a bill of goods that dairy is healthy. You know what? For some people, it's neutral. For a lot of people, it causes disease. It can cause a lot of digestive problems, mm-hmm. autoimmune conditions. It can cause acne. It can cause all kinds of problems. And it varies from person to person, which is why it's hard to see in the clinical research. But the other point is that people think that dairy protects them from osteoporosis. It's not true, folks.
No, it's the calcium.
Calcium can slow the loss of bone.
Okay.
But yeah, when you look at the commercials, they don't say dairy prevents osteoporosis. They say dairy is a good source of calcium and calcium prevents osteoporosis.
So where else can we get calcium?
Vegetables. Vegetables are where we are designed. If you look at us from a primal perspective, we're designed to get our minerals from our vegetables and from nuts and seeds and things like that.
Okay, so another reason why it's important to get all those servings of vegetables in.
So with that said, I do eat dairy, and admittedly so because I like dairy. And I always say I'd rather die of a mucus plug than to live without dairy on some level. You know, a lot of my dairy comes from like whey protein and cheeses, but you know what? It's a choice I make. I know that it causes sinus problems for me, but it's a choice that I make. At least I make it knowing what the ramifications are. Mm-hmm. Most people think dairy's healthy, and it's just a faulty
thought. They, like, force themselves to eat it because they're thinking it's healthy. Well, there has been some stuff on the news and in commercials lately that say 3 servings of dairy a day promote weight loss.
Forget about it. That, you know, there was some press about that, but that, you know, the research is up and down on that. And most of the research that has been positive has been funded by the Dairy Association. I would throw that stuff right out the door.
Okay. Out the door. That was number 17. Now we've got a little bonus reason, that we had touched on earlier, and it talks about sprinting.
Yeah. Which is basically interval training, mm-hmm. which we've talked about previously, research is coming out suggesting that interval training is a great way to promote fat loss. And it works by flooding the system with hormones that are known to promote fat loss. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. And so when you do an interval session where you're running, you're sprinting, you're walking, sprinting, walking, sprinting, walking, that post-exercise kind of hormonal shift mm-hmm. causes calories to be burned for many hours. Okay. After the exercise is done, it could be 24 to 48 hours. After you've done the exercise, you could still be burning more calories than you would otherwise.
Okay. Very cool. That's a great key. I guess that's it for today, right? We whizzed through those last few points.
Guys, I'm totally sorry. We went 48 minutes on this one.
Ooh, long one.
It's a very, very long one. And, you know, I promise we'll keep them down in the future. But if it's a problem, break it into 2 sessions. That's cool. But by now, if you're hearing me say that, you've already listened to the whole show. So. Anyway, check us out at www.cutthefatpodcast.com.
Don't forget to check out our Facebook page, Cut the Fat Podcast, no spaces in between.
You're doing a wonderful job with that, by the way.
Thank you. I like to put a little nugget of information on there. I am going to post some pictures of us up there pretty soon, since we haven't done a video podcast yet, which we will be doing in the near future.
We will be doing video podcasts. And guys, I know some of you have seen the pancake recipe that Blythe has on the site. If you haven't, just search pancake on the search and you'll see it. It's a really great recipe. Yeah, I've had my own troubles making it, but I've had a lot of people who've been emailing me telling me how great these pancakes are.
I'm telling you, kids eat them. So they're phenomenal.
I'm going to try to get Blythe to do it in a video podcast, make them so that I can learn how to make these things a little bit better. But check us out. CutTheFatPodcast.com. Check us out on Facebook. All you got to do is search for Cut the Fat Podcast, all one word, all together, and you'll find us. Sign up as a fan. Tell all your friends. Go to iTunes, guys. I know that there are tons of people listening to this podcast. Only a select few have gone on and rated us. Please go on and rate us. It only takes but a minute, and it really does help us.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm going to leave you guys with the Grilled Lincolns again. Check them out at www.grilledlincolns.com. They have allowed us to use their music for our podcast. I love their stuff. So definitely check it out.
Great.
You guys see ya.
Have a great evening, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Say you want to try something new. A little twist of what you know is true. You're in a cloudy hole, a shit don't touch you. And you feel a place to pop the pussy's blue. And all the sticky things that keep me silent are the same things that make your safe world violent. Make you feel your days, but for now I wish you'd just come back when you're okay. Forget your shoes, just wear your flip-flops in the snow. It's hard to really